listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats. This is an episode I've been really excited about for a couple of months now, because it sort of merges all of my interests into one. So we have Jason Ball on, who's the author of WP GraphQL, and we're going to be talking all about like WordPress, headless WordPress, GraphQL and WordPress. I'm sure we'll talk about like frameworks, like things like React and WordPress. So I'm really excited about it. We'll get into that and introduce Jason in just a second. Today, we are sponsored by two awesome companies. One is Sanity and the other is LogRocket. We'll talk about them partway through the episode. With me, as always today, is Mr. Scott Tolinsky. How are you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing super good. I think this might be the single most sleep deprived episode of Syntax since the start of recording. Wes and I are both newly christened with the new babies. I have no idea how to say that. Yeah.
Extra. So, my kids have been running around telling people. So for those who don't know, I just had my baby boy, which is Kit Boss is his name. And we had him, 3 or 4 days ago now? Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling pretty good. He's our easiest baby so far, but
that's good.
We're cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. Brooklyn's doing a lot of sleeping, and that is good for us as well. So we are pretty psyched about this one. But yeah, I'm doing good. I pounded two cold brews, so I should be somewhat lucid and ready to talk about WordPress and GraphQL. This is like a subject I'm like very, very psyched about. So we got a billion questions for Jason. Wes and I were Jason. that was a happy accident, but that was great, just to show you where my brain's at today. But yeah, Wes and I were talking before the show started. We just couldn't believe how many questions we had for Jason here, and hopefully our questions align with your questions, and we get everything answered, and you all feel like you got a whole lot out of this episode, because I'm personally feeling like I'm going to get a whole lot out of this episode.
Mm-hmm. So, Jason, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Jason Ball. Been working on WP GraphQL for about 2.5 years. Been working with WordPress for over a decade at this point, full time, in various roles. Yeah, I don't know. Love open source in general, and happy to give back with something I'm passionate about.
That's awesome. So you recently, I saw that you had left your current job to work on WP GraphQL full time. And then just 10 minutes ago, I got a message from you. You have some exciting news, which we didn't even know, but you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, myself and Kyle Matthews had some conversations. Kyle Matthews is the co-creator, I believe, of Gatsby, heads that up. So I chatted with Kyle and Sam, and basically, they said, hey, we like what you're doing with WP GraphQL. We've got a lot going on with Gatsby and WordPress and having some issues with the REST API. We think that a native GraphQL implementation on WordPress is kind of the way to go to bridge the gap between the two technologies, using Gatsby for your static site front end and WordPress as your CMS back end. And so mm-hmm. we chatted, and they said, hey, we'd love to have you join the team so you can work on WP GraphQL full time without distractions of a day job. And so I obviously accepted. So I'm joining their team starting on, June 24th. Wow. And my primary focus will be WP GraphQL. Just get it to, because we're still in a beta, right? We're not at a 1.0 yet. So one of the early focuses is going to be just getting that to stable point, work out some of the kinks we know about now, and then make sure Gatsby has a first class, integration between WordPress and Gatsby, but also WP GraphQL should work well for any client, not just Gatsby. So,
mm-hmm. Wow. It seems like congrats. A great fit. Yeah. It seems like something that I think is a smart move for Gatsby, considering how much of the web is powered by WordPress. And Gatsby seems to be such an excellent choice for teams that are looking to maybe upgrade the front end of their WordPress site that maybe is already existing. And so for them to invest, time and talent into sort of the WordPress Gatsby scene, just the WordPress scene in general, I think it's a really smart move for them.
So let's talk about data in WordPress real quick, and then we can sort of get into WP GraphQL. So the sort of the basic way to get data in WordPress is you make a theme, and these themes by default will have sort of data like available to them inside what is called the loop. And then if you want to have like custom data, like you want to have like a homepage that pulls in your recent posts and the members of your company and a list of your stores and like a tag cloud. Remember that? That was the best tag cloud and all of that data. If you want all of that available to you on a single page, you have to go off and write a bunch of custom queries with either the get posts or the WP query class that they have in there. And then you loop over each of those and whatnot. A couple of years ago, WordPress started working on the WordPress JSON API, which allows you to have endpoints for hitting them and just going and grabbing those different pieces of data, which is great because if you are trying to build something with a WordPress backend and you want to pull in that data, even if you're just doing a regular WordPress theme and you want to like be constantly refreshing posts or for whatever reason, if you want to fetch that data outside of a regular WordPress theme, that's what the WordPress REST API is for, as well as there's a whole bunch of like mutations there where you can push data to. And so that's good. But you've come along and created a sort of GraphQL interface for actually fetching data. You want to tell us a little about like what is it? Like what is WP GraphQL and why did you make this thing?
Yeah, so what is it? I'll start there. So WP GraphQL is if you install the plugin, it's a plugin currently. If you install the plugin, it makes your WordPress site a GraphQL server. And what that means is that you can use the GraphQL query language, which is a specification not tied to any specific technology, but it's a specification for how to write queries and how a server should respond with data. So your WordPress site becomes a GraphQL server. So now you'll have a slash GraphQL endpoint. So you get a single endpoint and then you can write queries. Using HTTP requests, you can write a GraphQL query to ask for any number of resources. And in response, you get a JSON payload matching the shape of the data that you asked for. And right now we support like pretty much all the core data that WordPress ships with, like posts and pages and custom post types, tags, categories, and custom taxonomies, comments, users, all that stuff. So out of the box, you just activate the plugin, you get an endpoint. You can start writing GraphQL queries against that endpoint and getting data back. It's almost like a hybrid between the two things you mentioned, like WP query on the server side that allows you to get data kind of in a flexible manner, and REST allows you to get it over an endpoint, where REST isn't so flexible. It's like a resource per endpoint. And WP mm-hmm. query, you can combine, like you could query on a single page for, let's say, comments and pages and posts, like if you wanted to. And WP GraphQL allows you to query for many resources in one request, where REST is kind of like one resource. And then if you want another resource connected to it, you have to follow up with another request.
Mm-hmm. Like, so if you've got a list of users and you want to pull in those users, maybe you want to pull in their posts. And for each of those posts, you want to pull in the categories. And for each of those categories, you want to pull in the description. Like that's often in WordPress, that's like two or three different queries. And then you have to do like a weird PHP loop where you're like, you like rebuild it almost there's map in PHP, right? Yeah, you just map over it and create your new data. Does WP GraphQL get rid of that where you can do relational queries?
Yes, it does. And it actually makes it more efficient. If you did it the way that you talked about, like in PHP, you'd probably write something like a WP user query, let's say to get 10 users. So that's one mm-hmm. query. And then you're going to iterate over that and you'll probably say, get 10 posts for user one, get 10 posts for user two, get 10 posts for user three. So for 10 posts, you're going to write 10 more queries to get 10 posts for each user. GraphQL, since we know ahead what data you're asking for, we can make mm-hmm. use of what's called deferred resolving, or in greater GraphQL land, it's called data loader. And this allows us to say, okay, you're asking for users and you're asking for their posts. I'm going to write the one query to get all 10 users, and then I'm going to wait until I have all 10 users and write one query to get all posts for all 10 users. So instead of 11 queries behind the scene talking to SQL, it ends up being two queries. So that's kind of the gist of it. So since you're asking for your data up front, it's smart enough to be able to make some of those optimizations for you. So yeah, it's less code for you to write because you can just in GraphQL syntax say, here's what I want. I don't really care how I get it, but this is what I want. GraphQL is going to figure out the how for you and then give you the data back. So it's,
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was my own personal experience with GraphQL as like the, one of the biggest benefits is that it you don't worry about how you're getting the data from the API, except for when you're writing the API, you just worry about what the data you want is. I'm a little bit curious because obviously you said you've been working in WordPress for over a decade. I'm interested in maybe how you came about GraphQL initially and maybe like what some of your initial thoughts were when you saw GraphQL, when you first started to use it. And maybe how the sort of idea for, oh, hey, I should be working on a WordPress implementation of this even came about.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, so I've been, yeah, like you said, working with WordPress for a decade or so, mostly building just like sites, right? Like most people in WordPress, worked for a couple agencies building sites for realtors and or like real estate home builders and stuff, built some auto dealer websites, built all sorts of stuff. Now, for the past 4 years, I've been working for a newspaper publisher. We have about 100 newspapers across the United States, and we do a lot of content syndication. So like two papers, for example, that we have are the Denver Post and Boulder Daily Camera, which are, I don't know, what, 50 miles away from each other or something. Mm-hmm. Boulder is a smaller town, has less coverage like in the newsroom. So Denver Post, let's say they write a news article about the Denver Broncos. Boulder Daily Camera can say, hey, we don't have a reporter there. They can click a button saying, we want to subscribe to these articles. And then automatically, as Denver Post publishes these articles, any paper, such as Boulder Daily Camera that's subscribed to it, will automatically get that information. So we were doing a lot of this content syndication, pushing and pulling of data across our network of, you know, hundreds of sites across the country. And we were using the WordPress REST API pretty heavily. We started using that before it was in WordPress core. And then we used it after it was in WordPress core, but it was causing us a lot of headache. We were kind of at this spot because when you syndicate an article, if you think about like a post or an article in WordPress, it's not just one entity. It's a, it's the post, but then it's the terms and the images and the author, right? So you're talking all these different resources that you have to move around to syndicate one article. And so with the rest, we were doing, you know, we'd send over the post data. It would make a callback for the featured image, then make a callback for the gallery, and then make a callback for the terms, right? So we're doing all these like network requests, and it kind of got out of hand. Like it was very hard for our team to like manage what was happening. So when there was a bug, it was like very difficult for our team to troubleshoot. And it was taking a long time because there was so much stuff happening. Like you had to wait for one request to finish before you could do the next request. So to syndicate one article, sometimes it's taken us like 3 minutes. And that's like in news, like obviously we're trying to do stuff fast. And so newsrooms were like, hey, this is broken. We're like, it's not broken. Just give it time. So, so there was a lot of pain points around that, especially as we started scaling to more sites, we're sending out more messages and have to handle all sorts of other stuff. So at that time, I was just like as a hobbyist playing with a JavaScript framework called Meteor, just nothing in production. I just had heard about it. I was fascinated with real-time, like real-time interfaces. So I was like, oh, this Meteor thing might allow me to build some of this stuff. I didn't have a real reason. I was just curious. So I followed that ecosystem for a while, built some hobby projects with it. And then they pivoted to this product called Apollo. And one of the guys heavy in that ecosystem put up a site called learngraphql.com about the same time. So, and I followed him on Twitter and whatnot. And so I was like, oh, what's this GraphQL thing? This is probably maybe mid 2016 or something. Like GraphQL was fairly new. So I started learning about it. I said, oh, this is real cool technology. I didn't quite like have a real use case that I thought of at the time. But then when we started having these pain points with syndication in the newsroom, I said, ooh, I remember this tech called GraphQL that allows you to do things with multiple resources in one request. Maybe this could help us. So I kind of spun up a proof of concept of, you know, how we could syndicate multiple things in one request. And I showed it to my team and they said, yeah, this makes sense. I did get a little pushback and whatnot, but once I had like a working prototype and said, look how little code this is and how easy it is to follow, it was kind of a no-brainer. Like, yeah, let's try to go this route. So it took us a little while, but we've been in production syndicating on GraphQL now for, I don't know, 18 months or so on, I think, 54 or 56 sites on WordPress right now at the moment. Yeah, so that's kind of the origin story. So it was server-to-server communication, which is not typically like the story you hear for GraphQL. Usually there's like some JavaScript or native client, like a native mobile client that needs data, and usually that's where you hear the origin story. But yeah, for us, it was PHP to PHP servers getting data in the most efficient way possible and in a way that our team could easily debug when issues happened.
Interesting. It's funny that you say that your first experience with GraphQL came out of the Meteor community, because it was the same for me, just because of Apollo and the connections there. And I personally, that was my whole experience as well. I'm doing some projects with Meteor. My site's actually still built in Meteor, but it's basically the whole API is now Apollo and GraphQL. But it was funny, because when that first came out, all the learning material around it, everything started to shift. And the team really started to push this message of GraphQL. And again, it was sort of just shocking how easy it all felt like it was. So it's really interesting to hear that somebody had a very similar experience in terms of latching onto it.
One question I have here, and one criticism I hear of GraphQL all the time, is that like you just write these queries and you have no idea how they're sort of fulfilled under the hood. And you could be potentially writing this like beast of a query that really bought, because at the end of the day, you do have to write a database query to actually resolve that data. And what I was like, I was really glad to hear you say the opposite, where you said like, oh no, this is much faster because we know exactly what you need ahead of time. So there we can sort of think ahead and make it much more efficient. So when you're writing the resolvers for WP GraphQL, how does that work? Are you writing MySQL queries directly, or are you still running that through the WP query interface?
Yeah, I think almost exclusively we're using native WordPress abstractions like WP query that exist already. And the reason for that is WordPress already has like an ecosystem built around these things, such as like drop-in cache plugins, right? You want to have Redis as your cache. You can drop that into WordPress, and that makes use of internals within these like WP query abstractions. So the way like WP query works is, as soon as it fetches an item from the database, it attempts to cache it. If you have a plugin like Redis cache or Memcache or something like that, it'll cache it in a persisted cache. And so by making use of those existing things, any thing you're already doing to optimize WordPress will already be in effect. We go a little bit above that and say, if you write a WP GraphQL query, we do this deferred resolving, but it's still once we get an object from the database, we cache it like WordPress does, because we're using WordPress functions.
Yeah. Oh, so any off the shelf WordPress plugin or anything that like modifies your data in between you actually fetching the data from the database, all of those plugins still work, right?
They should, as much as I know how to support it. Yeah. I mean, as long as they're not doing something.
You're not doing anything funky here. You're not going around anything that WordPress does. You're just using the native WordPress interface to actually fetch the data. And any hooks or whatever that are sort of in between your query and the database will still work as intended.
Yeah. For example, like somebody was building a membership site and they wanted their, you know, content of posts to be private. And they said, how can I lock this down in WP GraphQL? I said, depending on how they did it, it might already work. So he was using, I think, Restrict Content Pro. And he's like, okay, let me give it a shot. Yeah, it works, right? So he just does a query. And if he's not authenticated, then the content just was returned null. But then if he sent an authenticated request, like, you know, there's lots of different ways to authenticate in WordPress. We could maybe talk about that later. But if you send an authenticated request, and we're going to verify, just like the REST API would, do you have capabilities to see this content? And if so, plugins like Restrict Content Pro that are doing that logic of using core WordPress functions to check your capability, if it knows that you're authenticated, it'll send it back, whether it's REST or GraphQL or a normal WordPress request. So he ended up being able to do this without any extra magic.
How do you send a authenticated request then to GraphQL? Is it client side, like cookies or JWT, or how does that work?
Yes. You could do either one. So if you're on the same domain, like if you have a headless site, but it's on the same domain, like you have yoursite.com is WordPress and yoursite.com/headless app, right? So they're the same domain.
Yeah.
You can use the cookie auth that WordPress already has. So if you have a cookie for your WordPress domain already stored, then you can have that sent in the headers. I have an example app. So I have an app called WP Graphical. So if you're probably familiar with Graphical. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, Graphical is like an IDE for exploring a GraphQL schema and testing queries and mutations and whatnot. So I have a separate plugin that you can install called WP Graphical, and that's on GitHub. And when you install that, you get the Graphical IDE in your WordPress dashboard. And in the source code of that, we just have basically a function that wraps that React app and says, anytime you make a request, just pass the existing WordPress cookie along with the headers. So that's one way. That's source code you can look at to see how you can use cookies as authentication. Oftentimes, though, your WordPress site and your whatever site, whether it's Next.js or Gatsby or Vue and GridSum or whatever it might be, is going to be on two different domains. So cookie authentication won't work in that case. So there's different, like with the REST API, there was a couple authentication mechanisms like OAuth and basic auth. And there's a team working on JWT auth that they're hoping to get into WordPress core at some point. So any of those mechanisms, they also make use of just core WordPress functions. So there's a hook early on in WordPress execution called the term and current user, and GraphQL and REST API and your normal WordPress dashboard respect that. So any of the REST API authentication plugins, if you use those, you can use those with WP GraphQL. So basically most of those give you some sort of header token to pass in your request. And it determines that who you are, what capabilities you have, and then it continues to process, whether it's a REST request or a GraphQL request. So your identity is figured out early in the process and then passed down through the rest of the execution. And then I have my own plugin called WP GraphQL JWT authentication. So that's that allows you to actually do a login mutation with GraphQL to get a token and response. And then you can use that token in your headers as well. So there's lots of different ways to do it, but any way you can authenticate with WordPress core should be respected by any of these APIs.
Cool. Yeah. So that's fun. I mean, you mentioned that there's lots of ways to do it here. There's also lots of ways to host your backend data. This is a sponsorship ad transition. And one of those other ways that you can host your data is through something called Sanity at sanity.io. Now, Sanity is a longtime sponsor of Syntax over here, and they make hosting your backend really simple and really interesting with their whole bring your own front end service. With a little bit more about Sanity is Wes.
Yes. So we realize that WordPress and Sanity are a bit of competitors. And actually, it's funny. I've talked to the Sanity folks at a conference and they say it's not us versus the other headless CMSs. It's all of us versus WordPress, because there's a lot going on right now in this whole space of like, who stores your data and what's the best editing interface for it? How do we pull that out and put it into something like Gatsby or whatever? So we'll just say that out front. We obviously realize that they're sponsoring the WordPress episode. And we hope that that shows you that we're not tailoring our content to whoever's sponsoring the episode. But you want to check it out? Sanity.io is a headless CMS, which means you can log in, you can create your content types, you can have relational content types. You can even like code your own React-based component UI. So if you want like a custom upload interface or a custom data input or custom validation, you can code that all in React and use it on their hosted platform, which I thought was pretty neat. So check it out at sanity.io/syntax, and you're going to get double the included monthly usage. If you already signed up, not through the Syntax, just ping them in the chat with and mention the code Tasty Treats and you'll get sorted. That's it for today. Thanks so much to Sanity for sponsoring.
Cool. So I wanted to talk a little bit about maybe development process a little bit. So in 2019 for you personally, what does local WordPress development look like? How are you spinning up a new WordPress instance? Like, what are the fastest ways? What are the most efficient ways to get going with like a WordPress site so that you can get going?
There might be better or faster ways, but my preference, I use Local by Flywheel. It's a desktop GUI app that lets you just click new site and you can configure like the PHP version and the MySQL version. And in, I don't know, 20 seconds, you have a WordPress site and you have, it spins it up in Docker for you. And then you can, with the GUI, just click buttons to get access to SSH or access to, you know, the SQL database through SQL Pro or anything like that. It sets up XDebug for you to work perfectly with PHP Storm. I've been using that for probably 2 years or so for most local work that I do. And I rarely have a reason not to use it. There's a lot of other ones. Like, I've heard Lando is a good thing. I've heard like Laravel has like some local development stuff that people make work well with WordPress. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, I used that when I used to teach a WordPress class. We used it on Windows because like the what's the one that everyone used on Windows for so long? WAMP.
Yeah, WAMP.
And
XAMPP.
WAMP was such a nightmare. Yeah, XAMPP. And there was like a Laravel one that works super well. I can't remember the name of it right now. And it works super well on Windows, which I was surprised to see.
Yeah, I haven't really explored any of those other ones. For some of our newsroom sites, we have a custom Docker install that sets up like our cluster of sites for syndication and stuff. So for that, we use like a custom Dockerized local environment. But like all the WP GraphQL stuff I do with Local by Flywheel. This is not a sponsorship either. Like, it's just how I work.
Yeah.
Although we'll take them if they want to sponsor.
Yeah, sure.
What's up, Flywheel?
That's cool. I always love hearing people's development process. What about like deployment? Like, what do you do about like data that needs to be migrated? Because the one pain point that I always had with WordPress was if you have like some like settings or something like that in your database that need to be part of the deployment, ideally those settings would be exportable to like a JSON and then you can commit those. But some of the plugins only let you like save it in the database. Yeah. And that's a frustration. So you have to be like, all right, deploy this thing and quickly update the settings so nothing breaks. Like, what do you do about that?
So like on our production, like in our newsroom sites, we usually, if a feature is going to change, like if a feature depends on an existing setting, we usually try to roll things out with like a different setting for the new feature that this new feature will then take over once this setting has been changed. So like the old feature will still work, but if we add support for the new setting after it's been deployed, so we'll deploy both features basically, and feature B, the new feature, will only be active once we do something on production to activate it, like a flag or whatever. Mm. And then we'll usually hopefully try to remember to pull out the old feature, hopefully detect that. But that's kind of been what we do. We have been doing some interesting things with GraphQL and things like that, though. Like I mentioned, we have 54 sites across the network. And so managing like small things across 54 sites is very tedious. Like if you need to change one setting, like, hey, can we change, I don't know, the favicon for all 54 sites or whatever? Like that's an intern's whole day, right? Like logging to site A, logging to site B. So we've been building like a React app that uses GraphQL to talk to all of our sites so we can log into one site and do things like that. Like user management is our biggest pain point. Someone leaves the newsroom and they had access to 54 sites.
Oh yeah.
Like we got to, you know, get rid of them fairly quick or, you know, change their capabilities or whatever. So we have like a React app now that can talk to all 54 of our GraphQL endpoints. And then we can, in one interface, search for a user. It'll use GraphQL to search for the user across all our sites, bring it back and say, here's where this user exists. Then you can click on it and say, I want to delete this user or I want to change this user's role. And then you can confirm these are the sites I want to change it on, click submit, and it uses GraphQL to send a mutation. So what used to be, you know, several hour job is now a 45 second job. So that's, it's not exactly deploying, but it's like, yeah, how do you handle these settings when you roll out? And for us, like, that's one use case.
It's just so interesting to hear about other people's custom tools like that. I love writing custom admin tools in the back end.
Yeah.
And to hear about stuff like that, especially with WordPress, it just goes to show you that you can use WordPress in these kind of ways. Like, people are using their own custom Express apps. You just have to know where to send the right messages, how to connect to the right sites, build these custom tools. But it's fascinating to hear about this React app that can modify permissions across so many different WordPress instances. Really cool.
So their WP GraphQL obviously has support for mutations, pushing data. Like, you told me you can create and delete users. Are all of those things, like creating posts, updating posts, deleting people, uploading images, are all of those things supported for WP GraphQL?
Pretty much. We have an open issue for uploading images still that we need to address. You can sideload images, so you can pass a URL of an image and it'll sideload it. But as far as actually like uploading from like a form, like using multi-part form input or whatever, that's not at the moment supported, but will be soon. There's also like debate in GraphQL on like how you should even handle uploads. So I've been a little hesitant on like what approach to take here. So I've partly intentionally been holding off on that. There's potential at some point, I don't know for sure, that WP GraphQL could make it to WordPress core, or at least be recognized as like the official way to do GraphQL with WordPress. And so like, I feel like I have a responsibility to do things like well up front as much as I can, because if I make breaking changes, it potentially affects a lot of people. So sometimes I'm a little patient with features.
Oh, that's good. Don't do it right the first time. Otherwise you end up with this, some mistakes that were made in the first days of WordPress. 15 years later, we still have these like, Some stuff is the underscore and some stuff is get underscore, and then you have get the, and you're like, which does it return? Do I echo it? And it's so important.
Yeah. And I've already made some of those mistakes. Like, I have, like, I don't want to commit to 1.0 yet because there are some mistakes that I made that I want to correct, which will lead to a breaking change. But I want to do that before I say this is 1.0. And and now that I'll have time, like a lot of those features have been just on the back burner because they're going to take a fair amount of time to accomplish. And I do get to work on this at my current day job if the features make sense for my current day job. But for features that they don't use, like if I want to work on them, I got to work on it nights and weekends and whatever, which I do a lot of, but now I'll be able to work on it all day every day. So some of those features that have been on the backlog, I'll be able to address.
I'm really interested in the hosting picture for all of this, because that definitely is like a complication that I think can get new developers thrown off a little bit when they're working in maybe a headless WordPress setup. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on what do you think are the easiest, most efficient ways in your mind to host the WordPress backend and the front end site? Is there anything that makes it easier along the line? I personally am just like spinning up a site and a WordPress site and a cheap server and then throwing the front end up on Netlify. But I'm interested to hear what the approach that you see happen a lot is.
Honestly, I think it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Like in your case, it sounds like it's a site that largely you're managing by yourself. So your actual needs for the WordPress side are pretty minimal. Like in our case, we have a newsroom. Right. We have newsrooms with, hundreds of people logging in. So the WordPress still needs a decent server because there's lots of writes happening and lots of concurrent users using it. But if it's just like one person in their personal site, I think what you're doing works well. My current WP GraphQL docs website is a Gatsby site on Netlify as well. In that case, it's not actually using WP GraphQL. It's just Markdown because I want the community to be able to contribute by pull requests. I don't want the content in a WordPress site that only a handful of people have access to write to. So that's why I did that. But it's on Netlify and it works great. I'm real happy with Netlify. I think it really depends on your needs though. Like I mentioned, like our React apps in our case for the newsroom, the SEO doesn't matter to us. They're all admin apps. So we just use Create React App and we don't really host them anywhere. Like we just on queue them in a dashboard page of WordPress, right? So they're just a file that gets onto the WordPress itself.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But that's because we're not trying to like rebuild WordPress themes with it. We're building admin interfaces. But if I was, yeah, I think what you're talking about, though, you have a WordPress site on whatever comfortable host. Depending on your needs, you can go cheap for $5 a month with something like Bluehost or whatever. If you have a lot of users that need to be in there editing, you know, there's higher end hosts, you know, WP Engine or Pantheon or something like that, where you start paying $30 a month or higher. And then the good thing with the static site, though, is you can host it for free almost anywhere or very cheap. Like you could toss it on S3 for, I don't know, pennies a month probably.
Because it only needs to be
or Netlify for free
once, right? And as long as it's all static content and nothing is then reaching back to the original endpoint, it doesn't even need to be alive. Like you could even put it on like one of these services that spins down when it's not being used.
Yeah,
serverless, yeah. And now there's, though, speaking of that, though, there is this new, like Gatsby has docs and whatnot on building dynamic sites with Gatsby, right? Like the Gatsby swag store is a good example of one in production, right? Like when you load it, it loads up their inventory, but then it allows you to do dynamic stuff like purchase a product and maybe check the count of inventory left or something. So in some cases, a static site might still make dynamic calls back to a server. So it depends on what you need. Like, so we have a guy, Jeffrey Taylor, who's working on WP GraphQL for WooCommerce. And that would probably be an example where you still have a live WordPress server, but you could build a Gatsby site that does, like, puts your inventory in a static file, but then still makes calls back to your live WordPress server for things like the amount of stock left for this product, right? And then to process the actual, like, order and cart fulfilling and things like that. So it would save... it would save your WordPress server, you know, some traffic, but you'd still have to have a live connection for some parts of it. But the big thing is you'd get to theme and React, in my opinion.
It's a big win.
That's a big win where, like, I don't know anybody super excited about theming in PHP, especially once you've learned, like, how to take advantage of state in modern JavaScript libraries like Vue or React.
Yeah. Do you see any pushback from people who, like, the one of the huge downsides to theming in React or theming in Angular with a WordPress backend is that you give up everything that's been pre-built for you. And a huge portion of the WordPress community is people who are just buying a theme, getting a couple plugins, clicking it together, and that's it. And you see a lot of sort of anxiety around this whole, like, themes are going away. I don't even know what you think about that. Maybe you can say that as well.
I think there's trade-offs, right? In my opinion, I personally would rather work on a project that didn't have all this stuff being hooked in from random plugins and I had complete control. But I've also, like, I've been working more on, like, products at the newsroom, like, where we're, like, iterating on the same sites over time.
Yeah,
I'm not working for an agency that has 6 weeks to deliver this site, right? So that's my personal preference. But I do think there's a huge portion of the ecosystem that doesn't have that time and freedom to work on sites like that. And they just need,
like, a slider plugin.
Oh, this hooks in. And
yeah,
exactly. So I think we're going to start seeing more plugin support. Like, okay, this works in WordPress, but it also like Caldera Forms, for example, is a form builder and their forms are output in a React component. And so you can use it in WordPress, but then you could also use it potentially in Gatsby. So like I have an open issue on his plugin on Caldera Forms on GitHub where we did a call like this and brainstormed like how it could look to do form, like use GraphQL to query the form fields needed, use his existing React component to render the form fields, and then use a GraphQL mutation to send it back to WordPress. So, like, we're exploring that so that you can use an existing WordPress plugin potentially in another environment with, you know, very minimal effort. So I think we'll start seeing more of that. The more APIs like WP GraphQL evolve, I think you'll see more of those, like, use this in WordPress, but also use it.
Yeah, like it comes with a React component that you can drop in. And even like we had another Jason on the podcast a couple of weeks ago talking about Gatsby themes. And the whole idea there is you'd be able to bundle together like what it looks like and how it gets its data and the functionality all in one thing. And they can be composed. So that technically could be a thing as well, where you could just ship a Gatsby plugin.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for good reason, we're going to start seeing more of a trend of being like more prescriptive with themes. Versus like WordPress ecosystem is like all in one, like build any website under the sun with this theme, right? And there's pros to that, but there's also a lot of confusion with it. And people love the word bloat, yeah. right, with that. So I think we'll, like with Gatsby themes, I think we'll start seeing potentially more prescriptive themes. Like, this is a theme specifically for documentation. Like, if you're not writing documentation, don't use this theme, right? Like, it's going to have features and styles and stuff specifically for that purpose. And it'll, in this case, it could have queries pre-written to get data from WordPress or whatever your source is in the specific shape that a documentation site needs. Or you might have a restaurant theme. There was a Press 75 themes by Jason Schuler. He was pretty active in the WordPress ecosystem for a long time. And he's doing some cool stuff with WordPress still. He's got a site called Leaflets or whatever. But his idea is that themes should be very prescriptive as well. He had a theme called Pickle back in the day. This is just a classic WordPress theme. But it came with custom fields on the back end that only gave you certain inputs and then a very, very specific output. You had no drag and drop page builder. You didn't have short codes. You didn't have anything. You just had very specific inputs. If you wanted a menu, you enter your data here. And that, like, it was very unflexible, like the opposite of what you think of WordPress as being like this flexible, do anything you can. And his idea was like, if I do the work of making what a great restaurant theme, then that you don't have to think about how to do it. You just install this, enter data. So I think we might see a comeback of that kind of approach of like, this theme does exactly this. And then potentially less need for that, like flexible, like do everything you can imagine. But I don't know. I think there's going to be use cases for both, but I think we probably will see a cool comeback of that.
Hey, I had a question about when you have a WordPress site and you're using it for the API exclusively, do you have any techniques that you commonly do to sort of prevent the WordPress front end from being loaded? Do you have a theme that you use that redirects? You're doing it on the server? What are you doing for that aspect of the front end of the site?
Yeah, so we have one theme in our newsrooms that we call a content hub where all our newsrooms push some information to, and that has no front end to it. So I think we hook into, I'd have to look up the code. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but I think we hook into maybe the template redirect hook in WordPress, and we just have like a one-line function that basically says if it's not a GraphQL or REST request, just like return an empty div or something, so you just get a big white screen. I think that's all we're doing there.
Sure. Cool. Yeah, really interested about that. So in this world of building all of this stuff here, you're inevitably going to hit into problems. Sorry, everybody. I'm sleep deprived. My transition game is not good today.
He'll get back at it.
It'll get back once things get back to normal here. Our sponsor of this episode today is LogRocket. Now, LogRocket is the service that allows you to see the errors that are happening in a real-time video replay of everything that's going on. And this session replay includes more than just the user clicking around and a bug happening. It also shows you the error log at the time, your network request tabs, your Redux store, pretty much anything you'd want to see to be able to solve a bug. And this way, you don't have to ask your user a bunch of questions via email. Hey, what did you do to get this bug to happen? You can see it happen yourself and solve the bug. So if you want to try this excellent service, head on over to logrocket.com/syntax. You'll get 14 days for free. Highly recommend checking it out. LogRocket is one of those services that I find to be extremely, not only fascinating, but just so, so useful for getting these errors and bugs solved up in no time.
All right. Next question. I think that part of the reason for WordPress's huge popularity is due to custom fields and custom content types, custom taxonomies. That's where you are able to create, like, you can create a store content type. And then you can have like custom taxonomy, which is like a tag or a category, but it's just another way to categorize your content. And then the plugin Advanced Custom Fields, which I think seems to be the biggest one. There's another one. I haven't been in the WordPress world for a couple years now. There's some rumblings of another one that people seem to like as well. Those things alone, allowing you to create your own custom content types with custom input fields on the back end, I think are why WordPress is so popular in sort of the agency world, where you can just whip up a quick site with a custom backend. Does that have support in WP GraphQL?
Yeah. So, if you use register post type or register taxonomy, There's just a couple extra parameters you have to fill in to add GraphQL support. So like the REST API, for example, you just say show and REST equals true, and then you give it like a callback for the controller class. So in GraphQL, you just say show and GraphQL true, and then you give it a GraphQL single name and a GraphQL plural name. And that's like the names that the schema okay. will use to reference your objects. So yeah, and you could say register post type car, for example, and then show GraphQL true, GraphQL single name car, GraphQL plural name cars. And then you'll have a schema where you can query for cars, mutate cars, update, create, delete cars. So yeah, and you know, three or four lines of code, you can have all sorts of craziness. And then if you register a post or a taxonomy to be related to the cars, like a make and model taxonomy, for example, so you could like label it as Honda,
yeah,
for example, then if you register the taxonomy to be connected to the car post type, GraphQL does those connections in the schema for you. So you can, you could do something like query like cars, and then on cars query for make, and then ask, you know, get a list of the make, or well, and you probably wouldn't have a list of makes for cars, but yeah. So, or you could go the opposite way and say like, get a list of makes. So you could have like Honda, Toyota, yeah, whatever, and then nested on that, you could say, give me the 10 popular cars or whatever it might be. So in one request, you could ask for the makes and the cars, nice, of that make.
And what about filtering and sorting? That's one of the big moments of GraphQL is that it's not actually a query language at all. There's nothing built into GraphQL that lets you filter and sort and things like that.
That was so confusing to me when I first started. That I was like looking at one documentation, yeah, and trying to use another, and I was just like, why isn't this filter not working? It's like, oh, because you never built in a filter, dummy. You know, you have to build it in yourself.
Yeah, so we do have some open issues on that. We do have some filters already for things like filter by, you know, the tag that a post is in or whatever, you can pass an ID. We have some filters like that. For custom post types and taxonomies, it's not super well supported. We have some open issues that I plan to address pretty soon on that to make it dynamic. As soon as you register post type, you have filters available. So some of that's up in there. But I do have an extension plugin called WP GraphQL Tax Query that allows you to query posts by taxonomy input. I didn't want to put that in the core plugin because I'm still kind of iterating on the shape of how, mm-hmm, I want to do it, but that does allow you to query based on various taxonomy, yeah, parameters. Like, so, and then there's also an extension I have called WP GraphQL Meta Query, which allows you to query, you know, filter your query by meta field values.
Like date.
So, yeah, well, dates depends on how you do date. Date is actually like not a meta field. It's part of the core post object. So that,
oh, yeah,
you can do a date. You can do a date query with WP GraphQL core. So you can say, give me all posts before March 5th or, you know, yeah, like before March 5th, but after March 1st or something like that.
Oh,
so you can do that. That's built into WP GraphQL already.
So if I was doing like an event and that event had a date, like when is the event? Would you use the like built-in date to that content type, or would you create a custom field?
I'd probably do a custom field.
Because it could be in the future and then not published, right?
Yeah, because the date in WordPress affects so many things, like permalinks potentially, depending on your permalink structure. It can affect that. It can affect the actual like ownership status. Like if your date is in the future, then only admins have access to it because it's not considered published. So, or not necessarily admins, but based on your user role, you may or may not have access to the object. So I probably wouldn't use dates for an event type thing where you need like future dates or date ranges. It's hard to say. You might even actually use a custom taxonomy because taxonomies are more performant for querying against. So you could have like a start date taxonomy and an end date taxonomy and put a term for the date timestamp. And then you could actually do a filter using a tax query, which is more performant than a meta query, especially as your sites scale. That's probably how I would do it if I knew one of my needs were to query against that field. And then you could do hooks. Like Tom Noel wrote, he works for WordPress VIP. He wrote some good articles a couple years back on like proper uses of meta versus taxonomies. I don't know if you want to look that up.
Yeah, it's good to have like smart people on that kind of stuff, just because it stops us from shooting ourselves in the foot when we're trying to use it, right?
Yeah, because the problem with meta, if you're going to query, is it's not indexed at all, right? It's just like this wildcard key value store. And so as your sites grow, it gets very expensive. Where taxonomies are like they're indexed properly to query against. So their main intent was to basically query by groups of things.
I think that's all the questions I have for you about this. I think it's answered so many of the thoughts I had about like, how do you even build this? How do you host the thing? What do you do about custom fields? What do you do about authentication? It seems like almost all of the bases are covered. Do you have anything else that maybe you don't think that we asked about or anything you want to cover?
Oh, yeah. We did talk about custom types and taxonomies. You did mention advanced custom fields. So I've also written an extension for advanced custom fields. So I don't know if you've seen that or not, but I actually released that about 2 months ago. I was in an attempt to try and kind of bootstrap myself to go full time on this stuff before, and then Gatsby reached out to me. So that's my first like premium extension to explore if I can make enough money to do this full time. But yeah, the way that works, if you're using advanced custom fields in GraphQL, you just install that extra plugin WP-GraphQL for advanced custom fields. And then whatever fields you have registered, whatever field groups you have, get applied to your schema automatically in GraphQL. And then you can query that data. So let's say you had, you know, post and you added a field group called, I don't know, let's go with your event date example. You could have like a event dates, right? And a start date and an end date. Then you could query your post. You could just say, I want my post. And then, it'll prefix it with the field group. So you'd have like event fields. And then on that, you'd have two fields like event date or start date and end date. And no extra work. You just install ACF, install that plugin. It'll add two fields to your ACF like admin UI where you create your fields. One, you just click show in GraphQL that you want that field group to be exposed to the schema. If that's set, then you there's a one key that you can change of how you want it to be shown in the schema. Like if you named it something silly back in the day and you don't like that name anymore, you can change the name. But so you have those two settings and then it shows up in your schema and all the resolution happens without you having to write a line of code.
I think we're all very experienced with naming something silly at one point in time and then looking back at it later and be like, what was I thinking with this name? Yeah. Cool. Well, I don't have anything else. Do you want to get into sick picks now?
Oh yeah, yes. Sick picks. Let's see. Oh,
I got to think of something too. So you can stop for a sec.
Yeah. So sick picks are the part of the show for those of you who have never listened to a Syntax episode before, where we like to talk about things that we have in life, in our office, in our work that are sick. Something that we really find to be excellent and want to share with you.
I have one. I'm going to sick pick something that I sick picked a long time ago, and then Scott sick picked, and I'm going to sick pick it again.
Jeez.
It's the CalDigit TS3 Plus, which is the Thunderbolt 3 dock for the MacBook Pros that don't have any ports in them. So you plug this thing in, and it gives you a whole bunch of USB. It gives you Ethernet. It charges it. You can run multiple monitors off of it, and I've talked about how it's unreal that you can actually have a single cable install where I've got audio gear and hard drives and two 4K monitors and charging a 85 watt MacBook all on one cable, which is unreal that you can actually do that. So I bought this thing before it even came out initially. And then I was bummed that they like released the new one where they had like eSATA ports on the original one, which is like allows you to like hook up a hard drive, which I don't know who's doing that.
And if you're doing that, you could still do it via USB with a simple setup.
Yeah. So I was kind of bummed because Scott, you bought the new one that has the SD card, right?
Yeah. Although they came out with the space gray one now, and I don't have the space.
That's what I got.
I want the space gray one now, and it matches. I'm not going to drop the money to buy one that matches, but yeah.
Oh man. So I was super happy because I did have to run an external USB hub off of this thing because it just didn't have enough USB ports in it.
Wow.
And then the new one, I think they added two new USBs.
I was going to say mine's got a lot of USBs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The new one has, I think, 3 or 4 more than the original one, and an SD card slot, which is the best, because if you've got like a camera or something and you just want to pop, that was the best part of the old MacBooks, where you just slap it in. You don't have to worry about a dongle. So big fan. They did send it to me. I bought the original one with my own money. And then I've been like evangelizing it for 2 years now. And they said like, hey, if you want the new one, we can send it to you, because I've probably sold more enough that it's worth it for them. So that's full disclosure. They did send it to me, but big fan of it. Absolutely love it. It's the CalDigit TS3 Plus Thunderbolt 3 dock.
Nice. I have a sick pick as well. Seeing as how we do have them. Dang it. I had it just in my head, and now I'm just like blanking. I was just stalling for time. I don't know why I just forgot about it. Okay. And this sick pick is one that, since Wes has gone with a repeat, I'm going to go with the repeat as well. And this harkens back to one of the first few episodes of, I don't know if harkens a word anyways, but this goes back to one of the first few episodes of Syntax where I recommended the application Figma. I use Figma every single day, and I've probably used it every single day since that episode where I recommended it a long time ago. And Figma is basically a sketch alternative that works on any platform. It works in your browser. It has like Google Docs style multi-user. It's called multiplayer mode, where everyone can edit a doc. You can leave comments to resolve. And if you've used Sketch before, Sketch sort of just stopped coming out with new features for a while. And it only worked on Mac, and they just like sort of, I don't know what they were doing. They just weren't doing a whole lot, where Figma was constantly adding stuff, whether it's new layouts or the way that their component system works. And let me tell you, if you've used symbols in Sketch, you're going to be blown away by how components work in Figma, because it's so much more practical in real world. So I'm such a huge fan of this application. So check it out. It's Figma. It's an illustrative app. It's a prototyping app. It's a design app. I use it to design everything. My entire design system for the new Level Up tutorial site, which we just recently launched a couple of days ago at this point, I guess. It was all done in Figma first before we moved it into actual React components. And to be able to have a whole component system and everything built in Figma ahead of time really made the new design system what it is. So yeah, that's my sick pick.
Sick. What about you, Jason?
I already talked about it, so I'll go with Local by Flywheel, nice. Which is an application that allows you to spin up WordPress sites very quickly, in probably 20 seconds or so. You can configure your PHP version, configure your SQL version, set up Xdebug for PHP Storm, have access to SSH to run, CLI commands against your WordPress site. It uses Docker behind the scenes. So very helpful. I use it almost daily.
Nice.
So that'll be my sick pick.
Sick.
If I can, one thing, you mentioned Figma had Google style, Google Docs style, like integration edit, or, called? Collaborative editing. That actually brings up something about GraphQL that we didn't talk about.
Oh, yeah. We have it on our list.
I had it in the list. Tell us about it.
An amazing part of GraphQL is subscriptions, which is still as a whole, being worked out, what's the best way to implement subscriptions. But the idea behind subscriptions is that a client, say a React component, can subscribe to data and tell the server, hey, when something changes, tell me about it. Instead of historically, you'd write an application and you'd do something like long polling and say, hey, server, did something change? Hey, server, did something change? Hey, server, did something change? Well, here you just say, hey, I want to know about this, but just tell me when it happens. I'm not going to ask you again. Just tell me. So with WP GraphQL, I've been working on prototypes for how that could look. So that, WordPress is an event-driven architecture already. So there's actions that get sent out when certain things happen, like on save post or on comment deleted or whatever. So there's these events already happening. And so we can, with GraphQL, if you subscribe to these events, we can send you a payload that matches whatever you want in return. So I've been prototyping what that could look like. We're exploring that with Gatsby for doing incremental builds, right? So that's been a potential pain point with Gatsby is, if you have a large site with lots of data and you just correct a typo on one page, do you have to rebuild your entire site with thousands of pages to fix a typo, right? But with subscriptions, if the site was already built and Gatsby could just receive a payload of, hey, here's this one thing that changed, it could potentially merge that into the already built site, right?
Yes.
So we're exploring GraphQL subscriptions for, and like, I think one thing in WordPress, I'm not a huge fan of it, Gutenberg, the new editor in WordPress. I think there's a lot of potential with it. Like, I love the concept of block-based editing. I love React. I'm a huge fan of React. There's a lot of things I'm not a fan of how it's been done to date. I've tried to be vocal as I can with the time I have in like the GitHub repository for it and Twitter, of course. But yeah, I think there's a lot of potential for it. And it, if at some point in the future, you know, GraphQL is baked into WordPress core or even as a plugin, you could do collaborative editing with Gutenberg, because at the block level, it could subscribe to events and then it can know who's editing block.
Yeah.
And then you could show like the avatar of who's editing it, like on the top of the block. And maybe you could lock that block down so that only that person could edit it, but somebody else could edit the other parts of the page or something like that. So GraphQL like enables that future. And I don't know what it would look like and if that's how it would happen, but it's a possibility because of GraphQL and the subscription spec of GraphQL. So it could be interesting.
Word. We have so much to talk. We could do a whole nother episode. Gosh.
Yeah, if you've got questions to follow up, maybe we'll do another one in like 6 months or whatever. I'm sure a lot will change. I think the whole incremental build thing is one of the biggest pain points in Gatsby right now, and it's something that they're focusing on. So I'd love to like hear like what does that look like in 6 months, 8 months from now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very hard problem, especially like I have ideas on how it could be solved for WordPress specifically. But since Gatsby can talk to any data source, it really gets complicated. Like if you're just building a Gatsby site for just WordPress, like I feel like I could give me a few weeks and I could have a solution. But for the multitude of data sources, like that's a very hard problem. So we'll see. It's going to be fun if they come up with something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's we now. That's awesome. Cool. So now we're going to get into some shameless plugs where you can shamelessly plug anything that you are working on. Are you working on anything other than WP GraphQL, or do you want to just shamelessly plug WP GraphQL?
Yeah, just WP GraphQL and Gatsby and, you know, the ecosystem between the two. I have lots of WP GraphQL extension plugins, you know, like WP GraphQL Tax Query and MetaQuery, WP GraphQL for advanced custom fields. Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm trying to focus my time on.
You're on Twitter, right?
Just shamelessly plug that.
Yeah, you should plug your Twitters so people can follow you.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Jason Ball, JasonBahl, and then at WP GraphQL.
Nice.
Awesome.
I'm going to shamelessly plug my new debugging course, which is on dev tools and debugging. We just cover all of the practical areas of the React dev tools, the Chrome dev tools specifically. We talk about how to debug very common things like how to find images that are too large, how to find things that are pushing off your canvas in CSS, all sorts of practical real world bug solving we're going to be tackling via the Chrome dev tools. So check it out at leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year and get 25% off.
I am going to plug all of my courses, westboss.com/courses. Use the coupon code syntax to get $10 off, and you can learn mostly JavaScripts and CSS stuff.
Learn those JavaScripts.
Yes. Thank you so much, Jason, for coming on. This is so much information that I've been wondering about, and I think that this was probably going to be one of our more popular episodes for the year.
Yeah, definitely.
So thanks. We really appreciate it.
Sweet. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. That's it. Thanks. And we end off with a peace. So peace.
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 Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.